This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. Fighting continues between Israel and Hezbollah while international efforts to broker a ceasefire intensify. President Bush is urging the UN Security Council to adopt a U.S.-backed ceasefire resolution. But Lebanon objects to the draft proposal because while it calls for a cessation of all hostilities, it allows Israeli troops to remain in southern Lebanon. Israel wants to remain in the south until an international force takes over and threatens to expand ground operations against Hezbollah if diplomatic efforts to end the war remain stalled. With a solution to the conflict seemingly a long way off, we've invited officials from past administrations with years of foreign policy experience to discuss their views on what needs to be done and what can be done to solve the Mideast crisis. Later in the program, a renewed call for protecting the children in the fighting, but first, voices of experience on Middle East diplomacy. If you have comments or questions about the diplomatic road to resolution in the current conflict, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is talk@npr.org. Joining us first is Zbigniew Brzezinski. He served as National Security Advisor to President Jimmy Carter. He's now a counselor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and a professor of American Foreign Policy at Johns Hopkins University. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you.
First of all, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is now on her way to the United Nations to work on making changes in this draft resolution that might be acceptable to both sides. It's going to be a pretty hard thing to achieve. What do you think it would take to move things forward from where they are at the moment?
Firm and very strong American commitment of the kind that has been lacking for most of the nearly 4 weeks of this conflict. In fact, the resolution which may be now obtained through a Franco-American effort or initiative is going to be very much like the resolution that could have been obtained 3 weeks ago. But the United States, unfortunately, was not prepared to back it. Secretary Rice did not stay in the region. And in fact, the United States apparently thought that letting the war go on in spite of mounting casualties and enormous human suffering, would somehow produce a geopolitical or strategic advantage for Israel. And that's clearly no longer going to be the case.
Do you think that something different is happening in this war with regard to Israeli military power? It seems as though Israel has been somewhat taken by surprise, although I've also heard military leaders saying they're not taken by surprise. But there's a sense that Israel's been somewhat taken by surprise by the strength of Hezbollah. Is something appreciably different going on here?
Yes, I think what is different is that in the past, Israel has fought and successfully defeated largely conventional Arab armies, led quite often by rather corrupt political leadership, and with the rank and file not being particularly committed to anything except survival. In this case, Israel is confronting what might be called a people's war, that's what the Chinese call it, or a revolutionary war, which is the way the Algerian conflict against France used to be described, or asymmetrical warfare, which is what U.S. military experts describe the kind of resistance we now face in Iraq or the Israelis are now facing in Lebanon. And that's much tougher. These people are motivated. They're fighting for their homes. And the more they are pounded, the more their relatives are killed, the more intense their commitment and the larger the number of their recruits.
Now this is occurring also, it's assumed, with help from Iran and perhaps Syria?
Yes, it is. They're being helpful. They're providing arms. But, you know, whatever arms Iran or Syria provide to the Hezbollah is vastly, vastly overshadowed by the scale of the military support the United States is providing to Israel. So while it's of some importance, it's really not that decisive, because the revolutionary war, the people's war, or asymmetrical warfare depends much more on relatively simple occasionally even in some respects primitive weaponry.
Now, obviously, from what you said earlier, it seems to me you've been critical of the Bush administration's foreign diplomacy up to now. First of all, do you see President Bush, his effort at this, getting this ceasefire resolution approved in the U.N. Security Council, is that a step in the right direction? Is
it
enough?
Well, it's a related step in the right direction. But, you know, in international affairs, time also has its effect. If we had had that ceasefire 3 weeks ago, one could have said that Israel made a concession, it accepted a ceasefire in place, but had the warfare continued, Israel would have won. Now, the Israeli claim to military invincibility against the Arabs will have been very much damaged, and it will probably encourage more radicalism, more commitment to fight Israel on the part of some Arabs.
Let's look forward now. Towards where diplomatic efforts could go in the future. And I want to ask you this based on your own experience. You were involved in the Camp David talks in 1973 with Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin, Egyptian President Anwar Sadat, and, of course, President Carter. From your experience in those, what I assume had to have been very tough negotiations also, what would be relevant from that experience to today's conflict?
There are two lessons there. Fundamental. They're absolutely axiomatic. The first is, left to themselves, neither the Israelis nor the Arabs or the Palestinians will ever reach peace. This is not a condemnation of either, nor is it a judgment as to who's right or wrong. It is just a matter of fact. Neither side is prepared to deal in a truly compromised spirit with the other. It requires something like the United States to step in and to push hard for a breakthrough for peace.
Let me ask you, I know I've read...
Can I... my second point.
Okay.
And the second point is that neither the United States nor Israel has enough military power to bludgeon the entire region into submission and to impose a unilateral solution. We are discovering that very painfully in Iraq. The Israelis are just beginning to learn that in Lebanon.
Yeah. Let me go back to your first point, first of all, because you've made this point several times, and I've read a little bit about your experience with the Camp David talks in 1973. And one thing you point out, and it's interesting to talk about, is the degree of involvement, the degree to which President Carter was deeply involved in those talks.
Well, he certainly was. And he was involved in the sense that he studied the issues. He was involved in the sense that he had a basic sense of what a fair settlement would require. And he was prepared also to apply his personal leverage, the force of his intellect and argumentation, as well as the prestige and influence of the United States, to both parties, making it clear that if one or the other does not compromise, there will be consequences. And that, to me, seems absolutely essential. And the current president, Bush, is doing neither.
So presidential leadership, you would say, is key. U.S. presidential leadership is key.
Yes, ultimately. I think you could have had earlier on the kind of success that Kissinger had in the early 70s, negotiating on America's behalf between the parties, both of which were militarily exhausted and wanted some sort of a status quo established. But beyond that, you really do need the president. And while Secretary Rice can move things in the right direction initially, which he should have done 3 weeks ago, after that you need serious, well-informed, balanced mediation, not dictation, mediation by the United States and by the president.
We are talking about U.S. diplomacy in the Middle East. My guest is Zbigniew Brzezinski. If you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 800-989-8255, and we're going to go to Keith, and he's calling from St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Keith. Go ahead.
How you doing? Thank you for taking my call. I just have a question for or a comment for your guest. The United States, you know, we're a young country compared to most. Anytime we've ever acted militarily or got involved in a situation between other countries, people would complain that we didn't belong there, or we don't belong, we shouldn't be involved. And then we don't act and don't get involved, people complain because we didn't act and we didn't get involved. with the Lebanese-Israeli conflict. You know, the United States isn't doing enough. Yet, if we would have gotten involved from the beginning, other countries like Iran, Syria, Middle Eastern countries, probably even European countries would have said, okay, we don't need to be involved, it's not our business. It's like, no matter what we do, we act or don't act, there's always someone that hasn't complained about us.
All right, Keith.
Please, everybody.
All right, thanks so much for your call. That's an interesting question. Your response, Mr. Brzezinski.
Well, of course other countries will complain, because not all countries will agree with everything we do. But the fact of the matter is that the only country right now that has enough influence and leverage to try to influence both the parties, the Israelis and the Arabs, in the right direction is the United States. There is no choice.
Let me ask you, we are talking about the current outbreak of fighting between Israel and Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. But this is really part of a larger picture in the Middle East involving Syria, Iran, Israel, Hamas, the Palestinian territories, Hezbollah, Lebanon. I've heard it described as like a jigsaw puzzle, and all the pieces have to be interconnected.
You're absolutely right. And this is what makes our policy of not talking to many of the parties involved into utter lunacy. We think we are pursuing a policy of ostracizing those we don't like. In fact, we're ostracizing ourselves because it reduces our ability to explore, not establish necessarily because one cannot be sure in advance, but to explore whether there are any possibilities of some accommodation. So we are losing a great deal of leverage by this kind of posture. Secondly, you're absolutely right in listing these problems because they're interconnected. And in my view, we not only have to pursue actively an Israeli-Palestinian accommodation, and I really mean actively, but we also have to explore disengaging from Iraq, because the longer we stay, the more revolutionary that will become.
Mr. Brzezinski, we're running out of time.
Question of Iran and its nuclear weapons.
Thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Brzezinski.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Zbigniew Brzezinski was National Security Advisor under President Jimmy Carter. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. President Bush this morning pushed for quick approval of a United Nations resolution that would stop the fighting between Israel and Hezbollah. But ceasefire plans stalled. Lebanon's prime minister called the proposal insufficient, and negotiations continue. Today, we're talking with former senior advisors about what the U.S. can do in the Middle East and its role in the current crisis. You are invited to join the discussion. If you have comments or questions about the diplomatic road to resolution in the current conflict, give us a call at 800-989-TALK or send us an email to talk@npr.org. Joining us now from Paris is Edward Derigian. He was ambassador to Israel under President Clinton and ambassador to Syria under Presidents Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr. He's now director of the James Baker III Institute for Public Policy at Rice University in Houston, Texas. Thanks for being with us, Ambassador.
Good to be with you, Lynn.
What steps would you say the U.S. should be taking now to come up with a draft U.N. resolution that would be acceptable to both sides?
Well, I think the administration is very, very much involved in trying to get a consensus draft that all the parties can buy into. It's proving to be quite difficult, given the respective positions of the parties, the Lebanese, Hezbollah, Syria in the background, Iran in the background, and the Israelis. I think the effort can succeed. It's going to take some more time, but it cannot take too much time, because there's one thing that is looming, which is the possible collapse in Lebanon of the Lebanese government. Mm-hmm. Because of the continuing fighting. And if that center of moderation, and I'm talking about Fouad Senora's government, then the situation in Lebanon can revert to another civil war. So the clock is ticking. There is not that much time to get a sustainable ceasefire done on the ground.
You just said Iran and Syria in the background of this current conflict. The United States is not speaking with either Iran or Syria. Does the United States need to be speaking with its enemies in this case?
Well, I certainly am an advocate that you negotiate peace and conflict resolution with your adversaries and your enemies, not necessarily with your friends. Of course, we should be in contact with the both the Syrians and the Iranians, either directly or indirectly, but the context and the channels of communication should be there. There is not going to be a sustainable solution or any sustainable ceasefire without the buy-in of the Syrians and the Iranians, and therefore they have to be dealt with. Now, there are countries such as France. I'm in France now. I've had discussions with foreign ministry officials here today. They are in contact with the Iranians, and they are in contact with the Syrians, as we are. We are also in contact with the Syrians, but not at the highest levels. But the point here is that they have to be engaged, because there is not going to be the political compromises made, especially by Hezbollah, without the influence of Syria and Iran.
You're saying there can be communications without there being direct communications.
There can be, yes. I direct communications with the United States, between the United States and these countries, is, of course, more effective, because they all have their eye on Washington. When they deal with interlocutors, they're still looking over the shoulder to know what the position of the superpower is going to be, because of our influence globally and in the region. Therefore, the preferable approach is to be in direct contact.
Now, when you're talking about these kinds of contacts, you're not just talking about for looking towards a long-range solution. You're really talking about in the immediate as well, in this effort to get agreement on a ceasefire resolution now. You need to be also talking with your adversaries?
Yes, Lynn, but I think that we need to approach this crisis. This crisis presents, as all crises do, an opportunity. Despite the tragedy we see unfolding in the region on all sides, this crisis does represent an opportunity to get on with the real core issues in the region. And this will require contacting and dealing with all the players, there is no military solution to the Arab-Israeli conflict. Despite Israel's overwhelming military superiority in the region as a whole, Israel cannot, by military force, gain peace with its Arab neighbors. On the other hand, neither Hezbollah, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, despite their acts of violence and terrorism and suicide bombing, they are not going to destroy the state of Israel. Therefore, the only sustainable way out is a comprehensive political solution along the lines that we put together in Madrid in 1991. All the elements, the principled framework of peace is there, in which all the parties, Arab and Israeli and the international community, bought into. We do not have to reinvent the wheel. What is missing is a strategic political will on the part of the parties.
Okay. Has the landscape changed, though? I don't mean the literal landscape. I mean, but has the picture changed somewhat as a result of this current conflict, the fact that perhaps Hezbollah, with the backing perhaps of Syria and Iran, has been able to hold back Israel to some degree? What does that signify?
Well, absolutely. You're very right. Hezbollah has changed the equation in this sense. When we're talking strategically, you now have not only state actors but non-state actors such as Hezbollah, Hamas, and others that are playing a major role in the Arab-Israeli conflict with their backers. And this makes it even more imperative to move on the larger issues if we're going to have a sustainable settlement. And in Israel, former Prime Minister Sharon initiated the unilateral withdrawal from Gaza, and as a step toward withdrawal from the West Bank, if there could not be unilateral withdrawal, if there could not be negotiations with the Palestinian Authority. That now has been put in question by this latest crisis, which Hezbollah initiated, but which Israel has reacted to in a very strong manner. Therefore, the Israeli position under Prime Minister Olmert of realignment or convergence or unilateral withdrawal, that also, I think, is going to be questioned now by the Israeli people, that unilateral withdrawal doesn't work because the other side hasn't agreed to anything, and we, the Israelis, will be faced with the same types of attacks. And this war, this current conflict, is actually a war. Let's not play around with words.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing historically when you say, has the landscape changed? Because if I'm not mistaken, this is the longest war of duration that Israel has had to date with its Arab neighbors. Hezbollah has now held its ground. We're in our third week. And the other Arab-Israeli wars have been shorter, some of them much shorter, like the Six-Day War. So Hezbollah's ideological public position that only resistance works to end occupation and not negotiations may be changing the political landscape in the Middle East to the detriment of everybody's interests, the moderates in the region and the international community.
All right, let's take a call now from Chuck in St. Paul. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. Well, I think that was kind of my point or my question is that right now we're at a state where Israel is saying they must win convincingly before we stop. And Hezbollah is saying Israel cannot be shown to have gained anything out of their position. It seems like both sides are still saying we're not going to do anything if the other side can claim any kind of victory. And so what will need to change for them to come to some agreement to stop? I guess I'd like to hear you paint a picture of, what will need to change for in the current situation for the conflict to stop. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Ambassador Derigian?
Well, I think what has to change is that we have to reintroduce the strategic political horizon into the region. And by that I mean the prospect of a comprehensive Arab-Israeli peace which will enable all the parties to make the necessary compromises and buy-in. If there is a political horizon and people have some view of what the end game is going to be, they will then be ready with muscular diplomacy on the part of the United States and the international community and the countries of the region to start back on the path of talks and negotiation. As idealistic as that may sound now because of the tragedy we see unfolding before our eyes, that strategic approach to get on with a comprehensive settlement of the Arab-Israeli conflict is perhaps the most realistic way to end this mutual tragedy.
All right, let's take another call while we still have you with us. Shahid is calling us from San Jose, California. Hi, Shahid.
Hi, good morning. I really appreciate the opportunity. I just want to point out that the root cause of the current conflict is the occupation of 60 years. You end the occupation, there's no resistance. Just like when Britons left India, there was no Indian freedom movement after Britain left India. So you end the occupation, there's no resistance, there's no Hamas, there's no Hezbollah. As long as you have the occupation, which is suffering a generation of people for 65 years, you will have resistance, no matter how you put it. And to top it, there's no even-handedness in the U.S. policy at all. To supply Israel with missile-guided bombs at a time of diplomacy is giving a very strong signal to the world whose side the U.S. is on.
All right, Shahid, thanks so much.
That we take this some serious
Shahid, steps. Can we get an answer from our guest? I think you've made your point. We understand it. Thanks for your call. And obviously, Shahid, stating what some people would say is a simple solution, but that's what people have been fighting for lo these many years, this piece of land that two peoples want.
And that's why I said in my remarks, which in response to the question of your listener, is that in the first instance, we have to have crisis management of the current battles between Hezbollah and the Israelis. But they should be linked, and that is going to be the task of diplomacy. They should be linked to moving forward on a comprehensive settlement, as the listener stated, of the basic Arab-Israeli conflict. The unfinished work of that conflict is the absence of peace between Israel and Syria, Israel and Lebanon, and Israel and the Palestinians. And the Palestinian issue, above all, is the most symbolic issue throughout the Arab and the Muslim world, through which the Arabs and the Muslims perceive much of Israel's policies, America's policies, and the policies of the West. So on top of all of this, in terms of the forces of extremism and moderation in the Muslim world, moving forward on the Arab-Israeli peace process will do much, not all, but will do much to marginalize the extremists.
Thanks so much for being with us, Ambassador Derigian.
It's my pleasure, Lynn.
Edward Derigian served as ambassador to Israel under President Clinton and ambassador to Syria under Presidents Reagan and Bush Sr. He now directs the James Baker III Institute for Public Policy at Rice University in Houston. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. With us now from San Francisco is Richard Allen. He was Ronald Reagan's chief foreign policy advisor from 1977 to 1980 and served as President Reagan's first national security advisor. He's a member of the Defense Policy Board Advisory Committee. Thanks so much for being with us, Mr. Allen.
I'm delighted to be with you.
I don't know if you just heard the end of that conversation with Ambassador Derigian, but my thoughts as it was concluding were that this is a huge diplomatic challenge for the moment, and it has been for many administrations past, and perhaps at the heart of it, as the listener just brought up, is the question of the Palestinian issue and the resolution of that. And as Ambassador Derigian was saying, it requires U.S. involvement and it requires bringing together a lot of pieces of the puzzle. When you look at it, what do you see as the best diplomatic strategy for the U.S. at this moment?
Well, I'm not one who is a firm believer in the magical aspects of a so-called comprehensive solution to the Arab-Israeli conflict. I've lived on Earth long enough, as I'm sure many others have, and watched the conflicts flicker, go out, and come to life again. And in this most recent incarnation of the conflict, we see it in a different way. I don't believe in the magical powers of a comprehensive solution between Arabs and Israelis, simply because the driving force of the extremists among the Arabs, generally speaking, and certainly these are those, including the jihadists, is not to come to terms with Israel and to live in some sort of coexistence, peaceful or a coexistence fraught with tension even, but to drive Jews into the sea and to eliminate and eradicate Israel. I can't understand why we're not also addressing the vision of Ahmadinejad of Iran, President Ahmadinejad of Iran, in which he seeks to literally erase Israel from the face of the earth. Now, it is not to say that we should not be engaged in trying, but the level of ideological commitment that has been placed from time to time in American diplomacy upon the magic aspects of a comprehensive solution in the Middle East seems to me to be ridiculous.
Well, based on your own experience as a diplomat in foreign policy issues, the issue at hand right now is to get a ceasefire resolution approved in the UN Security Council.
I quite agree with that. The issue is at hand to get a ceasefire resolution, but one that does not disadvantage Israel and one that is a realistic ceasefire based on the ability of a well-armed, well-equipped, fully intentioned international force to enter the region and to literally to enforce all of the components of a ceasefire, not excluding the implementation of Resolution 1559, literally the disarming of the Hezbollah, which is, as Mr. Derigian and I think as Zbigniew Brzezinski also pointed out, a non-state actor. That makes all the difference in the world. We don't know with whom we're negotiating. In fact, Hezbollah is a militant, ideological, fanatical force, fighting not just, as Mr. Derigian pointed out, for its homeland. I think Zbigniew Brzezinski said fighting for their homes. They're fighting for a much larger ideological cause, and one that doesn't admit the possibility of compromise through negotiation. This is what's different.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Mr. Allen.
Delighted.
Richard Allen was National Security Advisor under President Reagan and is a member of the Defense Policy Board Advisory Committee. He spoke to us from San Francisco.